Katie Goodman, host of Democracy Now! For more than 15 years, CJSF 90.1 FM has been bringing Democracy Now! To the greater Vancouver area every weekday at 11 a.m. From New York, this is Democracy Now!
First, we're going to get rid of fact-checkers.
Rid of fact-checkers. Weeks after meeting Donald Trump at Mar-a-Lago, Meta CEO Mark Zuckerberg announces sweeping changes to Facebook and Instagram, including the end of third-party fact-checking in the United States. We'll look at how Meta's decision to lose content moderation could impact Facebook's 3 billion users around the world. We'll speak to Nobel Prize-winning journalist Maria Ressa in the Philippines and more. Then we go to Los Angeles, where devastating fires have killed at least 5 people, destroyed 2,000 homes and buildings in what could be one of the nation's costliest climate disasters. Over 130,000 people have evacuated.
Tonight, more people may get evacuation orders, and if they do, please leave immediately. If you have an evacuation warning, get ready to go.
We'll speak to John Valiant, author of Fire Weather, on the front lines of a burning world, and Los Angeles radio and TV host Sonali Kohatkar. She had to evacuate her family yesterday. All that and more coming up. Welcome to Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. 5 people have died, 130,000 people ordered to evacuate as multiple wildfires continue to rage in the Los Angeles area, destroying at least 2,000 structures. The Palisades Fire, which is believed to be the most destructive ever recorded around Los Angeles, has burned more than 17,000 acres, razing homes and businesses along the iconic Pacific Coast Highway. The Eaton Fire has burned over 10,000 acres, including many structures in Altadena and Pasadena. Firefighters appear to have fought back much of the Sunset Fire, which exploded late Wednesday, prompting evacuation orders around Hollywood. Red flag fire warnings are expected to remain active in L.A. through Friday night as heavy wind gusts and dry air continue to fan the flames. But officials say the most erratic weather patterns are believed to be over for now. Los Angeles may Mayor Karen Bass addressed the monumental scope of the wildfires at a press briefing Wednesday.
This firestorm is the big one in magnitude. Hurricane-force winds are usually accompanied by rainstorms, but these are hurricane-force winds that are combined with extremely dry drought conditions. To provide context, at 10:20 a.m. yesterday, the Palisades Fire was at 10 acres. 12 minutes later, it was at 200 acres. I know the world is looking at images of our city's devastation. I have seen the front lines of the Palisades Fire, and it is staggering.
Mayor Bass has been criticized for leaving Los Angeles on a diplomatic trip to Ghana over the weekend as warnings about the imminent disaster were ramping up. L.A. residents are also directing ire at Bass and the L.A. City Council, which cut the fire department's budget by over $17 million this fiscal year, while increasing the budget of the LAPD by nearly $126 million. Meanwhile, housing advocates are urging officials to do more to assist the 70,000 unhoused people in L.A. who lack access to shelters and to personal protective equipment to protect their lungs from the thick smoke blanketing much of the city. Southern California faces year-round wildfire risks due to the worsening climate catastrophe. We'll go to California for the latest later in the broadcast. Gaza's health ministry says Israeli attacks over the past 24 hours have killed at least 70 Palestinians, injured over 100 others. Among the dead or at least 8 people killed in northern Gaza in an Israeli strike on a home in Jabalia al-Balad. Some of the Gaza's remaining hospitals are scaling back services amidst Israel's severe restrictions on fuel supplies. At Al-Aqsa Hospital, Doctors Without Borders reports 15 newborns and incubators could soon die unless Israel urgently allows the delivery of fuel to power the hospital's generators. Mexican President Claudia Sheinbaum on Wednesday mocked President-elect Donald Trump's proposal to rename the Gulf of Mexico the Gulf of America. Sheinbaum was speaking to reporters at her daily news conference in front of a large map from 1607 that labeled much of the North American continent America Mexicana or Mexican America.
Obviamente, el Golfo de México es...
The United Nations recognizes the name Gulf of Mexico. But next, why don't we call it Mexican America? It sounds nice, doesn't it? Since 1607, the Constitution of Apatzingan was Mexican America. So let's call it Mexican America. It sounds nice, doesn't it? Gulf of Mexico since 1607, and it is also internationally recognized.
European leaders have reacted with alarm to Donald Trump's proposal to seize control of the Panama Canal and Greenland and vow to defend the national sovereignty of European nations. On Wednesday, Denmark's foreign minister said Greenland may become independent if its residents decide to, but it will not become part of the U.S. He made the remarks as Donald Trump Jr. visited Nuuk, Greenland, where at a news conference he promised residents, quote, "We're going to treat you well." The Justice Department says it plans to publicly release Special Counsel Jack Smith's findings on Trump's efforts to overturn the 2020 presidential election. But it will not release the part of Special Counsel Smith's report concerning Trump's mishandling of classified documents as legal proceedings continue for two of Trump's co-conspirators. Those findings will only be released to select lawmakers on the House and Senate Judiciary Committees. Both cases against Trump were dropped after Trump won re-election in November. It's not clear when the partial report might become available after Trump appointed Judge Aileen Cannon, who last summer dismissed Trump's classified documents case, temporarily blocked the release of Smith's report on Tuesday. Meanwhile, Trump has asked the U.S. Supreme Court to block sentencing scheduled for Friday in his New York hush money case and the 2016 election subversion conviction. ABC News reports Supreme Court Justice Samuel Alito spoke to Trump on the phone shortly before Trump's request. Alito claimed the call was related to a job reference for a former clerk. The White House on Wednesday announced another $500 million in military aid package to Ukraine, its last before President Biden leaves office. The Biden administration is also expected to announce new sanctions on Russia this week. In Ukraine, Russian shelling killed at least 13 people and wounded 32 others in the southern city of Zaporizhia on Wednesday. Some of the dead were killed while headed home from work on a bus.
People were leaving from their shift through the main entrance of the building, and that's when the attack came. There were two very loud explosions.
I see that people were inside your bus.
Yes, two people were killed and two others were wounded. Two were killed.
How many people were here, and how many people were killed in total?
There was a lot. It happened exactly when people ended their shift.
The government of Chad says it repelled an armed attack on the presidential palace Wednesday, killing at least 18 assailants, they said. One member of Chad's security forces reportedly died. The perpetrators have not been identified, but early reports blame the attack on Boko Haram. The attack came hours after the Chadian president, Mohamed Idriss Deby, met with China's foreign minister, Wang Yi, during an official visit to N'Djamena. It also comes just weeks after contested parliamentary elections. Deby seized power in Chad after his father, longstanding President Idriss Deby, was killed by rebel forces in 2021. Chad's among a growing number of former French colonies that have expelled French fighters in recent months. Lebanon's parliament has voted to elect a president filling a leadership vacuum for the first time in over 2 years. Joseph Aoun received 99 out of 128 votes with support across Lebanon's political spectrum, including among Hezbollah politicians. His election could help unlock funds from foreign donors as Lebanon seeks to rebuild from Israel's weeks-long bombing campaign and invasion last year. The Italian journalist Cecilia Sala landed in Rome Wednesday after 3 weeks of detention in Iran. Italian media says Sala's arrest may have been part of an Iranian plan to negotiate the release of one of their citizens who was recently detained by Italian authorities on a U.S. warrant. Mohammed Abedini is accused of being involved in an attack on a U.S. base in Jordan last year. A wide-ranging strike that would have shut down East Coast and Gulf Coast ports next week has been averted for now as the Longshoremen's Union reached a tentative deal Wednesday guaranteeing job protections from automated technology and major wage increases. Union members must still vote on the agreement. In other labor news, the SEIU, the Service Employees International Union, is joining the AFL-CIO, adding roughly 2 million members to the 13 million-strong group, which includes workers across more than 50 other unions. The move reunites the two powerful labor groups after they parted ways nearly two decades ago and as the incoming Trump administration's expected to launch new attacks on workers' rights. In North Carolina, the Republican-dominated state Supreme Court has blocked election officials from certifying the re-election of Democratic Justice Allison Riggs. Riggs beat her Republican rival Jefferson Griffin in November's election by 734 votes, a tally which was confirmed by two recounts. Griffin is attempting to disqualify the votes of some 60,000 North Carolinians in order to overturn his loss, but has failed to provide any evidence the votes were unlawful. Here in New York, hundreds of immigrant justice activists rallied at the state capitol in Albany Wednesday to demand Governor Kathy Hochul and lawmakers immediately enact legislation to protect immigrant New Yorkers ahead of Trump's return to office. The bills include measures preventing cooperation with ICE and providing legal services to those who need it. Angel Reyes Rivas from the group Make the Road New York says he fears for his mixed-status family.
New York State cannot be reactive. We need to be proactive. We shouldn't wait for Trump to be elected to start pushing for this, right? We need to make sure that New York State becomes a state that is an example to the nation on how to treat people, how to treat immigrants, how to uphold human rights.
And the funeral for President Carter is being held today at the National Cathedral in Washington, D.C. All five living presidents are attending. President Biden is giving the eulogy. And those are some of the headlines. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, the War and Peace Report. When we come back, we'll look at the fires in Los Angeles. But first, Meta CEO Mark Zuckerberg announces sweeping changes to Facebook and Instagram, including ending fact-checking in the United States. We'll speak with Nobel Prize-winning journalist Maria Ressa in the Philippines and others. Stay with us.
All I hear them is about a war on crime and pollution and them economic solutions. Sure. We no want no capitalists. I assess them out with I'm and chalice. And we no want no big business plan. We no want no promise from the UN. Hear me now. Just take a look how the world is. Is a handful of man run the world business. For 2,000 years them a plan this. It's so deep them no care if me sang it. Them deep with science and I use it against we people. Say we men figure through this. But poverty is no accident. They mashing up the world with them roads and cement. We no want no capitalists. I assess them out with I'm and chalice. When me on ya. And we no want no big business plan. Never know.
No Capitalist by Kabaka Pyramid. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman with Nermeen Sheikh.
I'm Nermeen Sheikh. Welcome to our listeners and viewers across the country and around the world.
Out with the fact checkers. That was the message delivered by Meta CEO Mark Zuckerberg as he announced sweeping changes at Facebook, Instagram, and Threads. Zuckerberg outlined the new changes in a video posted online.
The recent elections also feel like a cultural tipping point towards once again prioritizing speech. So we're going to get back to our roots and focus on reducing mistakes, simplifying our policies, and restoring free expression on our platforms. First, we're going to get rid of fact checkers and replace them with community notes similar to X, starting in the US. After Trump first got elected in 2016, the legacy media wrote nonstop about how misinformation was a threat to democracy. We tried in good faith to address those concerns without becoming the arbiters of truth. But the fact checkers have just been too politically biased and have destroyed more trust than they've created, especially in the US.
That's Meta CEO Mark Zuckerberg. Nicole Gill, the head of Accountable Tech, called Meta's move a, quote, gift to Donald Trump and extremists around the world. The decision comes weeks after Zuckerberg dined with Trump at Mar-a-Lago and after Meta donated $1 million to Trump's inauguration. On Tuesday, Meta also appointed a close Trump ally, Dana White, to the company's board. White is the CEO of Ultimate Fighting Championship. Trump praised the new Meta policies.
Honestly, I think they've come a long way. Meta, Facebook, I think they've come a long way.
Mark Zuckerberg also announced other changes, including a loosening of rules over what kind of content can be posted on Facebook and the other sites. Under the changes, women can be referred to as household objects. Meta users will once again be allowed to say gay and trans people have mental illness and more. To talk about what Meta's new policies mean in the U.S. and worldwide, we're joined by three guests. In Manila, Philippines, we're joined by Maria Ressa, founder, CEO, and executive editor of the Philippine independent news site Rappler. She won the Nobel Peace Prize in 2021 for her work defending free expression in the Philippines. Her book is titled How to Stand Up to a Dictator, The Fight for Our Future. Siva Vaidyanathan is the author of Anti-Social Media, How Facebook Disconnects Us and Undermines Democracy. He's professor of media studies and director of the Center for Media and Citizenship at the University of Virginia. His piece for The Guardian just out, Mark Zuckerberg has gone full MAGA. And in Doha, we're joined by Mark Owen Jones, associate professor of media analytics at Northwestern University in Qatar and an expert on disinformation. He's the author of Digital Authoritarianism in the Middle East, Deception, Disinformation, and Social Media. Let's begin with you, Professor Jones. Digital authoritarianism. Can you talk about how Mark Zuckerberg's announcement soon after he met with Donald Trump and is giving well over $1 million to the inauguration and put one of his closest allies, Trump's allies, that is, on his board, fits into that concept and what it means, digital authoritarianism?
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you for having me. I mean, digital authoritarianism, broadly speaking, is the use of digital technology for authoritarian ends. You know, it's fundamentally anti-democratic. And I think Zuckerberg's move is indicative of the authoritarian direction that the United States is going. He is essentially saying that the social media company, or Meta, is subservient to the whims of the political elite. And I think a key part of digital authoritarianism here that's really important is this notion of the post-truth. Authoritarianism thrives on the absence of facts. It thrives on a war on reality. Why is that the case? Well, because authoritarian leaders, they're not interested in the truth because the truth can be used to attack them, to discredit them. As we know that Trump was documented as being one of the most lying presidents and politicians in history. But they want an alternative reality, alternative facts. And the idea of a war on fact checkers really fits in with this, because what it means is that authoritarian leaders, they want people to respect them, they want people to fear them, they fundamentally want people to see the world through their eyes and be submissive to their wishes. And I think that's what this represents, is that Martin Zuckerberg is clearly bending the knee to Trump, not only doing his bidding, but also creating this massive donation. And I think what we need to understand about digital authoritarianism is that we are in a space where we increasingly communicate on digital technologies. Zuckerberg's move is designed not just to, quote unquote, prevent censorship. Here, censorship is a euphemism for actually harm against minorities. Some of the examples you mentioned were women, but also transgender people, but also immigrants were mentioned by Zuckerberg himself. These are all right-wing dog whistles. Essentially, what this means it's going to be is open season on these digital platforms for people to attack minorities and to harm them. It's not about reducing censorship. It's actually about increasing digital violence against minorities, which is part of the new, I would say, increasingly autocratic America.
So, Maria Ressa, could we get your response to Meta's new policies? You've said that Zuckerberg's decision would lead to, quote, a world without facts, and that was a world that's ripe for a dictator. So could you respond to what Mark said now and what you think this means in particular for the Philippines, for social media, Meta social media sites in the Philippines?
Well, I mean, first of all, the Philippines, we had a bout with our own dictators starting in 2016. And I would say we were in hell under our previous president, and now we're in purgatory, while the United States is just headed to hell, it feels like. Let me quickly say, it's not a free speech issue, which is what he claims. It's a safety issue. And exactly what we just heard, what you're seeing is that now this platform, one that unites more than 3.2 billion people around the world, has declared open season on minorities. Actually, it's no longer safe for any person, because one of the things that we've learned in the Philippines is that the insidious manipulation on this takes away will. Right. So we already know around the world that it has become a platform that has enabled genocide. This is in Myanmar, in Southeast Asia. Meta itself sent a team and they concurred with the United Nations in two separate findings. The second one is, this is a platform that hacked our biology, that changes the way we feel fear, anger and hate, to change the way we see the world and the way we act. Election interference. What you've seen now is as early as 2016 on Brexit, the UK actually fined Facebook then the largest amount at that point in time because of what would be equivalent to election interference. Nothing else was done beyond that. But again, part of the reason the world is where it is, where as of last year, 71% of the world is under authoritarian rule. We are electing illiberal leaders democratically, partly because our public information ecosystem, social media, Facebook, is corrupting our individual communications with each other, taking away agency.
And Maria, could you say specifically, I mean, in a place like the Philippines, there's almost 90% of the population in the Philippines is on Facebook. And how is Facebook used, not only in terms of posting information, but also as a means of communication, and the way in which misinformation has spread on Facebook in the past, not only, of course, in Myanmar, which is the example that you cited, but also in the Philippines and elsewhere?
I mean, very specifically, our past president, Rodrigo Duterte, used the design of what was an advertising and marketing platform of Facebook to do information operations. I was getting an average of 90 hate messages per hour, free speech used to stifle free speech. But beyond that, these networks of information warfare, networks of disinformation, literally changed our history in front of our eyes, setting the stage for the election of Ferdinand Marcos Jr., the only son of our dictator who was in power for 21 years, Ferdinand Marcos. You'll remember Imelda Marcos and her shoes. Her son, Ferdinand Marcos Jr., won overwhelmingly in our presidential elections because literally Filipinos were taught in information operations, YouTube, Meta, and Facebook, that Marcos was not a dictator. in 1986, ousted in people power. Instead, he was the greatest leader the Philippines has ever known.
Into 2021, the Rohingya refugees actually sued Facebook's parent company, Meta, over its failure to stop violent hate speech on its platform, which contributed to the bloody military crackdown of the Rohingya Muslim community by the military in 2017 in Burma, also known as Myanmar. Law firms in the U.S. and U.K. launched the legal effort on behalf of the Rohingya around the world, including in Bangladeshi refugee camps. Plaintiffs demanded over $150 billion in damages. The U.N. found as many as 10,000 Rohingya were killed by Burmese forces during the 2017 genocide, though some estimates put the death toll at twice that. Over another 730,000 people were forced to flee the country. I just want to go to a quick video, part of a video, produced by Amnesty, featuring a survivor of the Rohingya genocide.
My name is Saidullah. I am from Myanmar, but now I'm living in Bangladesh, Cox's Bazar, as a forcibly displaced Myanmar national.
I personally experienced that online hate speech turned into offline hate for us. There were many different things on Facebook against us, which turned the people of Myanmar against us. I saw many different anti-Rohingya posts on Facebook. For example, I still remember a post that said, "The birth rate of these Bengali Rohingya people is very high. If it remains continuously like this, we will become their slaves." Now they are our slaves. Let's go for action. I knew about the option of reporting hate speech to Facebook. I already reported some hate speech to Facebook, but it only said, "Thank you for reporting. This post doesn't go against our community standards."
I wanted to bring Siva Vaidyanathan into this conversation, author of Anti-Social Media, How Facebook Disconnects Us and Undermines Democracy, a professor at the University of Virginia. And I wanted to go to this issue of hate and how deadly it can be, whether we're talking about Burma, Myanmar, or whether we're talking about the United States. I mean, you have, just giving a bunch of examples, roughly 7 in 10 lesbian, gay, bisexual adults have encountered any harassment online. Fully 51% have been targeted for more severe forms of online abuse. You have roughly about a third of women under 35 may have been sexually harassed online. You have a study of 51 countries reveals 38% of women had personally experienced online harassment. Professor Vaidyanathan, if you can talk about the connection to hate and how that connects to, well, your headline of your Guardian piece, Mark Zuckerberg has gone full MAGA.
Right. Well, let's be clear about this change. And I'm really thrilled that you've started this conversation by going beyond the United States. What Mark Zuckerberg announced the other day clearly only applies to the United States in terms of its specificity. In the United States, since 2017, Meta has been trying to at least appear that it's taking content moderation seriously. And let's remember, the proper phrase to describe what we're talking about is content moderation. Fact-checking was never part of the formula. It's not about facts. It's about protecting users. It's about protecting people from things like harassment, from protecting groups of people from campaigns and movements. People like the citizens of my town, Charlottesville, Virginia, who encountered a flood of violent right-wingers in the summer of 2017 through a movement that was largely organized through Facebook. So the idea here, and why Zuckerberg has appeared before Congress multiple times, swearing that he's doing a good job, has all been about the United States. The content moderation policies and procedures and infrastructure beyond the United States have never been sufficient and have never been serious, with the exception of Western Europe. Facebook, like every other digital media company, pays particular attention to the demands and laws of the countries in which it operates. And therefore, it didn't pay much attention to the demands of content moderation and protecting users in the Philippines. It's never paid attention to protecting users in India or in Pakistan, in Cambodia, in Uzbekistan. These are places where tremendous propaganda flows through Facebook channels unmitigated. Now, the United States question, though, in this sense is, what is Zuckerberg changing? Zuckerberg is scrapping a rather elaborate and expensive system that sort of worked to keep the Nazis at bay and to somewhat limit things like harassment and somewhat make sure that the user experience in the United States is not horrifying the way that one would encounter horrifying material on X today, for instance.